I mean, you could realistically die out there.
I'm dead now.
You're dead now?
Yeah, I thought about it, and so I died.
It's that simple, huh?
Yeah, you know.
So, I mean, like, what's it like being dead now?
You know, kind of freeing, to be honest.
Do you almost feel weightless?
I have unlimited vacation.
Whoa, that is true. That is true. The funeral was a banger. You were there, obviously, because you're here now. So, I mean, yeah, enjoy all that PTO, bud. I'm a little jealous. You have to tell me how you did that.
Well, it's not paid.
Well, you don't need money anymore.
There you go.
There it is. All right. I'll clap. Wait, do you want to clap off? Because you're
clap.
You're cookied up. Welcome back to Weebology, everybody. I am your part social, part degen, double life Professor Ricky.
What is up, everybody? I am your other professor, Ethan.
I don't think you saw me for like 2 straight weeks.
I was not unworried.
Yeah, no, I did a lot of traveling the last couple of weeks, and then I came back and had a bunch of family visit. So like I had a D&D night. So we talked about your, you know, you have to recharge those batteries every so often. But I had that whole week of shit after traveling, seeing friends with empty batteries, just completely drained.
And I think the part that was like even the most astonishing is like, I don't think you even came to the kitchen.
Nope. Well, I mean, I did just a very, that was thing too, is you were here, but I was just coming up and grabbing stuff. So I I was absolutely basement dwelling.
I was worried.
It was great. I don't know. I feel like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde of this show right now. Sometimes I'm super extremely social. Other times I need to be a burrito inside of a dark room, inside of a cave, inside of a basement. Does that make sense?
You know, I don't know if it's just the summer, but I literally cannot sleep more than 8 hours. Like over 8 hours is like impossible for me right now.
Really? I've been feeling that because I did have West Coast time. I was out there just long enough for that to matter. And then I couldn't readjust very well due to like you said, being social and stuff. So like I did, however, get one fortunate day where I slept like 11 hours. It was beautiful.
Well, I read something or watched a video recently that said like if you're getting enough sleep, you should not need your alarm.
Yes. If consistently too, because your rhythm's got to be on point. But yeah.
What's funny to me is like that still doesn't tell you like how much time you should be sleeping, right?
I think it's still that 7
like,
to 9,
I'm like
right?
Naturally waking up at 7:04 or whatever a.m.
That's kind of nice, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
I would like to be more regular. I mean, because up to this point, like last night, I slept like shit, but the night prior, I slept like 12 hours. So clearly, I'm on some kind of fucked rhythm.
Yeah, it's not ideal. I don't think.
No,
to be,
it is
like,
not
vacillating aggressively.
I'm gonna get that smoothed out. This double life has made me take a hit. But speaking of double lives,
that is very nice.
Thank you. Today, we're talking about a show that we have mentioned in the past. That not only did we consider it a dark horse of last season of summer, spring 2022. Well, yeah, we're in summer right now. Summer starts in that. It's not the fall. Okay, yeah. In spring 2023, we considered this maybe potentially a dark horse.
Sorry, it was from summer.
It was from summer.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I didn't quite understand what you were asking, but we're on the same page now, buddy.
So the reason why that was a train wreck of me introducing that, because I realized we always like say last season. That's not evergreen. You got to let them know, you know. So, I mean,
yeah, I guess that's fair, but like we are in this specific time period and thus our voices are outside of time.
Oh, my God.
I'm a time traveler.
Or is it locked down by time? Because it'll be in the context of the time in which it was said.
I think it's extremely locked down. But also, like, if you were to listen to this episode in 3 weeks.
Still is applicable.
Right.
Gotcha. Hey, Ethan, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about a show that we both, I think, originally potentially thought was going to be the dark horse of the year.
Right.
Or the season.
At least.
Dead Mount, Death Play.
Yes. The summer 2023 Geek Toys anime, who has done some other stuff that you may have heard, like Plunger before and things like that. But yeah, this show
is hard to explain.
It is
without
hard to,
blowing the load immediately.
We're going to have to blow the load.
I've tried to explain this show to a few other people, and I'm like, you know what? Now that I say it like this, it sounds like it's terrible. Like, it's impossible to actually, in my opinion, like, give a, like, a biased opinion of this show and, like, your best way of describing it without it sounding like utter trash, even if it's actually pretty decent and, like, fairly well pulled off.
I think there's a reason for that.
Okay.
There's a very specific reason for that, and there's a couple of shows that we've done in the recent past, I would say the last couple months, that kind of fall into this category. But we'll, warning you now, you're going to get spoilers. We're blowing the load early. There's some stuff we'll get to probably later about maybe more of the mystery of this show, but it's kind of indicative with my first kind of main issue with it. I have a lot of good things to say about it, but as I watch it more, we had a couple issues. So setting this stage, you have a fantasy world plagued by a demonic sorcerer named the Corpse God, and only the Holy Warrior can stand between him and pure calamity. He's literally called the Calamity Crusher. So it would appear at the beginning that the Holy Warrior is got this Corpse God on the back foot, but uh-oh, Daddy's been learning some resurrection spells, and he decides to pop one off. It doesn't quite go the way I imagined he thought it would, because he was brought into another world. Our world. That's right. We got a reverse isekai in our hands, baby. So.
Right. So it's a reverse isekai. I think this was his plan.
Okay. So you think that
was to resurrect into a different world?
Okay, a different, and it happened
Correct.
To be ours. Gotcha.
It just happened to be ours.
Yes.
So we talked about it being very spoiler heavy. That is the major spoiler from episode one.
That literally is it. Because
and the thing that I honestly thought that the hero was going to get resurrected away from the battle, and thus like ruining that country's like potential to like stave off the Corpse God.
Right, and he might have been like had to reintroduce himself into now a fantasy world of just pure, you know, everything's burned to the ground to crisps.
Right, so they did an incredible job of giving you that expectation of like, okay, this is like the Calamity Crusher is going to be in Earth and he's going to be like some prodigy kid. Well, and then they're like, JK, whoops, it's the bad guy.
Yeah, so that's the one part that, before we get into the characters and now that we're in the real world, the problem I had up top with it is seems like they were so, it seemed like so such a finely tuned bait and switch that the entire show, it would appear, is hanging its entire hat on that premise, which is not, it's not inherently a bad thing, but it seemed like they just like had one really, really good premise of an idea and then strung forward from that. Right? Like they just like, oh, what if we did a character that's like this and a story that's like that? And then they're like, okay, and then how does it progress? And then they start to go like,
So you're saying you don't think they fleshed it out beyond the initial like shock value of being like, oh my God, it was actually the other guy.
The way that I imagine this going, right, is that who like the Mangako or whoever like came in, gave his pitch for his story, right? And then anyone in the boardroom that said, we'll take this manga, greenlit it from just that premise. And then he walked out and his assistant's like, dude, this is great. This is amazing. Like, well, okay, what comes next? And he's like, fuck, beats me, dude. Let's go figure it out.
Yeah. So I think another part that's like makes it extra difficult to explain to people like, oh, why would I like this show? Well, so he gets isekai'd into our world.
Yes.
And then there's a group of, like, I guess I would call them nearly superhumans in like, quote,
the
air
loose,
quotes
the
version.
Loosest, the loosest sense of the term,
and
I'd say.
And some
yeah.
of them do have some weird mystical ability, and some of them are just, like, insane magicians somehow.
Yeah, we'll get to that motherfucker in a bit.
But, like, the point being, like, it's hard to explain this like it, when you're just talking to someone about like why I like the show, let's just say, and then I'm like, they're like, oh, what's it about? It's just very difficult, in my opinion, to explain this in a way that's like very enticing to a listener without me just being like, look, trust me, the first episode rips. And it's fun and interesting through at least 10.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean? Like,
for
it's,
sure,
it's just difficult. This is like one of the shows I think that has been the most difficult for me to articulate why I like the first 10 episodes, I should say.
That bodes so well for a podcast about articulating shows that you like.
No, I know.
I know. I mean,
but shit, like without spoiling is what I mean.
100%. Right. And that's the problem with shows that have this initial big banger of a premise that like it's great. It's great to have a one episode hook. I think that's awesome. You need to have, once you're hooked, you need to have stuff in the back end to flesh all that out. And there's I want to start going into some positives here, though, because I do think that the idea and the world that they did build in whatever capacity they did do that was a really good fit for a character like our boy, the corpse god. So the body of the person, because he just didn't just come here willy-nilly, right? He actually replaced someone that was just killed in this world. That's kind of a bit of the mystery. This kid's name is Polka Shinoyama, and he has a bit of a life in his own right here. I think I like the initial premise, too, is that the corpse god's isekai into our world, it wasn't just I showed up here and now I'm a part of it. No, you are kind of taking the place of someone already, right?
Right. He didn't like Mushoku Tensei like from a baby into a new world.
Right. And he was basically, I really enjoyed the idea of that, because you have so much like you being in the dark about the person that they replaced when they came here does add a lot of avenues to like make things kind of tense or even comedic, or like he had, I think they almost cheated it a bit, because the corpse god had some access to some of Polka's memories, right, initially, and but not all of them, which I guess is, I kind of cheapened that. I would love to have seen him completely in the dark, like,
so
I know language and that's it. Like,
so when he starts in Earth, let's just say,
yeah,
Earth 616,
there it is.
He got like, you could tell he was slowly like regaining whatever memories Polka had, because he was like very confused about where he was, what was going on. Like, I think, and this was actually the first episode, I think, was the best by far of the whole series.
Country Mile was great.
Well, maybe not a country vibe.
I'm calling it a country mile.
It just seems like a very aggressive thing to say about it, but it was a good episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, he essentially, when he switches places with Polka, he's basically immediately after Polka had just gotten killed, he gets thrown in the body. And so he's still physically like, the proximity to the killer is like insanely close. And she's like, yo, I thought I killed you.
Yeah, she's a bit, at first I thought I was going to get kind of too annoyed with her, but then basically Misaki is her name, and she is this big fuck off bruiser with this big crowbar, and gotta love bruisers with crowbars. I just love it.
Killer Zaki.
Easy, right? So like,
so the first episode, he like switches places, and then Zaki's trying to like kill him dead for real this time.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, why is the Calamity Crusher struggling in a martial, like, you know, martially against this little girl?
Yeah.
And that's when I like initially started thinking like something might not quite be right. And then by the end of that episode, he uses like lich magic, essentially like necromancer magic, in our world. And
yeah,
thus, like, oh my god, it's him. It's not actually Calamity Crusher.
It did a really good job there in that the end of that first episode, too, where it was like, he was basically, what is this place? And Misaki's like, oh, this is like a place where like assassins like know to come kill people.
Yeah, like mafia and shit, too. She was right. Like, this is like a dumping ground for corpses.
And he's like, You don't say.
He's
it's
like,
funny.
Hee, hee, hee.
Have you heard of me? C.God, Mr. C.God, Corpse God is my full name. That's
yeah.
okay. So he's like, thank you for bringing me here. Turns out this world's got a fuck ton of magic.
He's Corpse the God.
Yeah. He literally starts using spirits and all this, like all the dead, the spiritual, I don't want to say spiritual pressure. That's another show, but he
a
does.
Better show.
He does use it. And, then we're kind of off of the races. I mean, we get a little bit of from there. We understand that the more of the context of why of like not why he was killed, but who was killing him. Misaki is part of an organization called Yotakaro, and that is run by the baddest, coldest bitch in this entire show, Clarissa. And she basically runs like dirty deeds done dirt cheap kind of situation.
She runs Afterlife, essentially. The club from
Cyberpunk. Yeah, so like party in the front, business in the back.
Right.
That's 100%. And hey, that business may be a little dirty, but we'll do it. With the right price, we'll do it. We got people on the bench that'll go out and kill your fucking, I don't know, neighbor or something. I don't know.
Right, so I think the real kind of like catch to the show or like the real hook is the fact that Polka, the guy he's been switched with, essentially,
yeah,
is part of this like super rich, super powerful family, and someone had paid to have him assassinated, and as far as I know, I still don't know who did it. They may have said, but
I think they did say alluded to, and more than alluded to is pretty heavy handed. We'll keep that, maybe that little spoiler. Just there's not many, but. Someone in this family does pay for a hit. It is a natural question. Hey, an assassin just killed the person in this body. Why? Why? That's the central hook to the mystery.
So I personally don't think I remember them coming out and saying this guy did it for sure. There was the reason being his family is so powerful and like they specialize in technology. They specialize in security. In all these certain aspects,
yeah.
They have assassins on staff, like essentially superhuman assassins. So they're like, why would they hire out a killing of their own family if they're going to do that?
Fair.
Interesting question. I think if I had my own assassination force, I would probably just have my own guys do it.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, why would I pay for consultants when I have an in-house team?
Unless you wanted to make sure that you're so far from... suspicion.
Money's not a problem for him. We know this.
Right.
So even like, it's not a matter of, oh, I don't want to shell out for an outside assassin, whatever, a fucking freelancer. No. They have the money. They have the chops. The Shinoyama like group essentially is a conglomerate, like in the trillions of yen and assets, as they put
it.
Yeah,
the Shinomiyas.
Shinomiyas.
I'm just joking. That's the girl from... But how funny would it be if they were like, oh, yeah, and this is Kaguya.
There's our fucking crossover. Yeah. Look at this. This is the multiverse of anime. So we in our core squad, you have, Polka. We're really referring to Polka as the main character. He's the corpse god. The real Polka has been transferred into a tiny plushy shark, which is fucking adorable and can't beat that. You got Misaka, who in the first episode got kind of life wiped by Polka, by the corpse god.
Yeah, she got unalived.
Unalived, and then semi-realived, and then she realized that she was a fucking zombie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sick. Gave her very... I found that to be a very tasteful way to keep her relevant. She was already a fucking beast, right? So make her basically indestructible, unless if she gets a limb chopped off, then she has to eat raw meat. That was an interesting throwaway line, but zombies do. She's now stronger than she was before, but not by an obscene level, it would appear, for other quote-unquote superhumans in this world. But the fun one is that her saliva has a paralyzing effect. That's kind of interesting. They didn't really use it a lot, but...
Interesting, but entirely unutilized.
Right. There's only one moment where I thought it was a clever use, where it's something she licked a fork and stabbed it into someone's leg, and that was actually pretty sick.
That was good.
So
what did you think about... Overall, the, let's say, fan service.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being essentially a hentai, 1 being
I don't know.
Beaufury.
Beaufury, yeah. Beaufury truly is the antithesis.
I would say maybe even there's got to be a show with even less cleavage, because
shout out in the Discord if you know what is the cleanest anime in terms of fan service you've ever seen.
Honestly, could be Pokemon.
Honestly, well, hold on. I feel there's probably some stuff there that there could be considered a little more. I was thinking more of like I had it in my head, like a fucking Odd Taxi doesn't do shit with that. Like what? I don't think they might actually.
I think they might.
Just a little bit.
But it's just disgusting.
But this show is.
It's like Beastars.
Now, Beastars is a completely different fucking animal, and that is a great pun.
Literally,
and I'll
good
take
job.
It. Thank you. I'll take that one at the bank. This is, I'd give it a 6.5.
Mm-hmm.
A 6.5 only because there's only maybe one or two scenes that were just like very blatantly sexual. The rest was just kind of showing skin and stuff. And one scene, it felt a little unnecessary. The other one was, while wild to watch later in the shower, when someone was confronting someone else. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
At least I found that to be the reasoning behind why she basically did a little shower invasion of themselves. It made sense. There was logic to it, you know?
Yeah, so I'll agree with you on the shower scene.
Yeah.
Though I think also unnecessary.
Okay.
But the one before it was even more absurd.
The hot tub?
Yeah. Clarissa basically has two like hot chicks that she's always fucking.
Oh, yeah. Represent.
Like nonstop. But in one scene, they're in like this big hot tub together and they're just like all fucking naked. And as they're like commenting about what's going on in the city to like our main characters, our main cast, they're like clearly doing some sort of sexual act that they're not showing on screen.
There are so many of these, like, I've seen these scenes before. It's almost a trope where, like, in the middle of like sexual interactions, there's
like pillow talk.
Yeah, essentially pillow talk during just getting down while they're exposizing. I don't know.
Expositioning.
Maybe? They're rattling off fucking lore dumps. Like, yeah. Expo dumps. What a weird, strange thing to do. I'm like...
So, weirdly...
Yeah.
I think if it was like a spy show, it would make total sense.
It's all about context.
Right?
It's all about context. And I guess the context, like I said, in the loosest terms, Clarissa, she's in the underworld. I think it's their way of being like, oh, look, she's like seedy. She's always down for hedonism. Like, always trying to get down bad. Like, whatever. Slam it down big style for my Dimension 20 fans. I don't know. Again, unnecessary. Do you think, would you go higher than 6.5? I don't know. I think any higher than that, it's being like a core element of the show.
Well, like part of the narrative. So that's the thing that's so weird about it. I don't think any of the scenes really added much to the actual show that they couldn't have done with as much gravitas in a different way. The thing that is like Misaki is just like a weird ball of energy.
Yeah.
Whether it's, I can't tell if she's trying to be sexual or if she's just like, you know how like girls will always like touch each other's tits and shit.
Yeah. Yes. What? I think there is an element of that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't tell if Misaki is into his,
niece?
Cousin.
This is okay. We're going to say weird family relationships when it talks about the Shinoyamas, but it's like, it's a weird family dynamic.
Yeah,
like,
so basically the way it is Polka is a late addition to the family.
So he's much younger than all of his other, I guess, immediate family,
right.
Quote unquote.
So like his brothers and sisters are all like 70, like 60, 70.
I think his oldest brother was like 59.
Right. So yeah. His father is like 70, 80. And so
fucking badass.
Right.
I love Rosa.
That is sick.
Yeah. We'll
so
talk about
anyway. The point being, a lot of the like his peers, like his relative age, are actually his nieces and nephews, including the guy who's running the company with the assassins.
Yes.
So it is just like a really messy family situation.
That's just maybe just that's what conglomerate families do, baby. I mean, that's just might be what it is.
But it's also interesting because we do have this whole like weird family dynamic. But we have Polka still around in the shark body, kind of helping us, like, figure out what's going on, right?
Right, right.
and kind of help us navigate these murky waters of, like, you know, being
now
an
I
old,
get why he was a shark.
Air, right?
I get it. I love that. And I was gonna say about Misaki, like, there's moments, there's long stretches where I just get rather, like, I'm at my wit's end with the character. She's getting very stale. Then she snaps into, like, the Zaki killer mode. Brings me right back in. I think it was a nice balance. They kind of pushed her ditzy side really hard. And then there'll be these moments where she's, like, seeing her go undercover kind of with the Shinoyama family when Polka visited. And her snapping complete professional was like, okay, that's kind of sick. That would be something that I would expect a professional assassin to be able to do. So she seems just competent, just enough of the time for me to like it.
Yeah, she seems adaptable, but, like, when not on the clock, just an absolute fucking typhoon.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm struggling with is I can't tell if they're trying to put forth, like, her as a, like, a sexual actor, as far as, like, is there a relationship possible for her, or is she just, like, exuding that as, like, the flip side of being an assassin?
That's a really,
do you know what I mean?
That's, like, a really good question.
Like, spies in media typically are, like, just very sexual beings.
Yes.
Like, the seduction part of like, the spy craft.
Right. Charisma is a natural charisma is an element of being good at that job, right?
And so I cannot figure out if that's what they're trying to show, or if they're just, like, she's so fucking whimsical because she's essentially untethered from reality even before she becomes a fucking zombie.
When we talk about another character a little later, I want to revisit this point because I think it's a third thing. It's a completely third thing. But I thought at first she was kind of that, you know, sexual, like, the Fire Force route, right? Pour all of your bullshit kind of, like,
into one character.
One character,
like,
nonsense. But you almost look at the rest of the women in the show, they almost have nearly identical, like, bodies, skin showing, even in the deep lore of the Corpse God's past in his original world.
So true.
His mentor was literally the same body shape.
Yeah, she's, like, basically naked the whole time.
Right, except for her kind of badass, like, skull witch hat mask combo. Fucking sick.
Yeah, she looks like the ancient magus or whatever the fuck.
Ancient magus's bride head, but then give, like, what's the red witch's name in Black Clover?
Vanessa.
Give her Vanessa's hat and give her the head of ancient magus's bride, or I guess the ancient magus, and you got yourself tits. Give her tits. And then boom,
well,
you got this character.
She's a lot like, funnily enough, you said Scarlet. I think that's Vanessa's mom's name.
Oh, yes.
And she looks almost exactly like her.
Yes, actually, yes.
I looked up, like, the wiki of, like, I don't know if it's a light novel or a manga, but I looked it up, and it basically, they never show whether his mentor has a face or not.
Oh, interesting.
So it's possible that she's just, like, a skeleton face or whatever, because they show, like, frequent flashbacks of him, like, back in his old world before he really became, like, a crazy necromancer.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a period when he's literally just a skeleton somehow.
That's very strange. I've wondered if that's, like, maybe just the way he sees himself in those memories, where
right,
he actually truly was, you know, not even recognizable. Because there was moments where, like, when he was talking to his quote unquote friend, the Majesty, and when they're talking about the emblem, right? And he looked like a blacked out, sure, but he looked like a kid.
Right.
So I think maybe your point is right. Maybe at some point he did transform into this skeleton. Or maybe it's how he saw
this
himself.
This fucking ghoul of himself.
Absolute skelly man.
But I think one thing they did, like, another sort of, like, subterfuge on the, like, not necessarily the genre, but on the, like, character of a necromancer is he's not like a crazy guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I think in most media, the necromancer is that, like, sicko, like, psychopath, like, mass murderer guy.
Yeah, right.
Whereas in this case, he seems to be kind of more of, like, the, I don't know how to explain it. My brain's not working, but, like, he's making contracts with the dead to help them sort of resolve their issues.
It's like what his mentor said. The one thing that he's better at than me is empathy. He's a sympathetic necromancer. He does utilize the dead, but he also sympathizes with,
right,
with the power that they give. Because I found it really interesting, necromancy in this world as a power system is that necromancers exercise spirits, and then as kind of a trade equivalency, they take the energy that was keeping them there and uses it as magical power. So in almost the way that he sees necromancy techniques, you are freeing spirits to their eternal resting place for the power, that energy that was keeping them here. It almost makes, to your point, necromancies feel almost like a benevolent power.
Right. And I think that's what they did really well, is they showed that in the past, he actually was not like just a scourge across the land, or at least originally.
Yeah.
And his entire like life's goal for you know, hundreds of years, because it seems like, you know, he basically had interminable lifespan because of his like transition to full corpse man.
Full corpse man.
But anyway, he like essentially finds kids out in the wilderness, like tries to raise them as a family, like loves them like as family, and I think also romantically, weirdly enough. Maybe. But we're going to scoot on past that and say, like, he clearly did not seem like he was out there trying to start fights with the, like, Holy Church or whatever in the show. But they go out of their way just to kill all of his like, family.
Yeah, right,
just
right.
Because they're, like, semi in the same, like, orbit as Necromancer guy. And so I think it really it sort of tries to, like, flip it on its head, like, Necromancer isn't necessarily just like a dark art evil thing. And I really like that as kind of like another aspect that they were trying to play with a little bit, because I've never seen a like good quote unquote necromancer.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like a fun little, I think, play on the role.
Yeah. And I think the really interesting part too is that by the end, and they could have done a bit more here. I think they will probably do a bit more,
like Dracula from Castlevania.
Yes,
like he's kind of just doing his own thing.
Yes, and people come to his fucking doorstep,
kills his wife, and he's like, "All right, fuck you.
Fine, you want to fucking fight? I'll see you in a year, motherfucker." And I'm coming with heat.
You know what?
I'm
fuck with this heat. And fuck you.
Well, all I was gonna say too is it did a nice touch of having the lifespan element of necromancy. And it looked like a bunch of those other beings at the end also had extended life. I think magical entities have long, long lifespans. It's kind of like the high elf thing in like D&D and stuff, where like they'll live for hundreds and hundreds of years. Maybe this kid, by learning necromancy, to your point, became this corpse. And I think over the centuries, he basically just became like numb to it all. And he said, fuck it. Like literally like just fuck it. Like I'm not gonna be able to find peace here. So I gotta go find it elsewhere. In the meantime, fuckers come to my doorstep, they're done. Like, get life wiped, literally, for my benefit.
Yeah,
so.
I think that was the whole point of his, like, masterwork spell at the end there, where he's supposed to transfer to another world, is like...
He was literally working on that for a while.
Right, like, I cannot find peace here, let's see if I can do it somewhere else.
Which is, come on, who doesn't want peace, right? A little bit of peace?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder, like, this is completely aside.
Sure.
Utterly unuseful to the plot of this episode that we're talking about right now, but
I don't care, give it to me.
It could have been fun though if he like essentially traded the war he was in his world, and like say he went to the body of like a private in the like the World War II in Japan kind of thing, and being like, oh shit.
Well, imagine if a necromancer found his way onto like battlefields the size and scope of World War II.
Right.
Imagine how much power he'd have.
I do think it'd be interesting, and then like
holy shit,
sort of like I really do like this aspect of the show, is like there seems to be certain individuals that are like just supernatural, like there's no real answer for how they're supernatural, but imagine that being compounded by the fact that there's like all these corpses all over this battlefield, and then being like, they have a fucking necromancer on the Japanese side. Like, how does that change the war?
Every death on either side is bigger bolstering
it's
stuff
like,
for them. Yeah.
It's like that movie Overlord. Did you ever watch
the movie Overlord?
Yeah.
I don't think I have, no.
Basically, it was like Wolfenstein or whatever, the movie, basically.
Gotcha,
so,
okay.
So the American troops go into Germany, and they find out that they're like essentially creating like super soldier zombies.
Fucking A, let's go.
And yeah. So like the whole movie is them blowing up all the zombies.
Oh, come on, that's good wholesome fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. So that kind of an interesting segue here, because that kind of covers maybe like the the necromancy, the fantastical side of this show. Then they have this whole other piece, which kind of it makes up maybe 70 to 75% of the entire runtime of this first season. And it's basically you have this mix of like buddy cop semi energy. But what you really have is like the squad within the Shinjuku like police force that is specifically tasked, called the Comp Threes, to take out and apprehend essentially Batman level criminals. Like, they're above your average criminal, but they're not, like, nuking cities.
Right.
But they're doing something, like, above what common humans should be able to do. Or they're just, like, these... Did you feel that Batman energy a little bit? Where some of these villains felt, you know, they had their own intensely unique flavor to each one of them, for better or worse, I will say. That was the energy I got.
Batman energy, maybe not. You mean like the people he fights against?
More the way the collection of the quote unquote villains are. Like each eclectic, you had one who's like a pyromaniac. You had one who is like a magician. You had one who is like a broker. And like you had another one who is just completely masked and mysterious. You weren't fighting organizations. You were fighting these individual players.
So I feel as though we do not have enough information yet based on like how fucking weird and foggy it gets near the end of the season.
Yeah.
To determine whether or not we do have like this overall like bad organization, the Illuminati, you know, type shit.
Oh, that's right. They did allude to that, didn't they?
Right. Yeah. So like I'm not quite sure whether I am on the same page yet, just because
okay.
I think that at the very end they did like a whole bunch of weird stuff to kind of like muddy the waters a bit.
Yeah.
But I liked the fact that there was all these like quote unquote supernatural beings, like criminals. What'd they call them?
Troublemakers.
There we go. Troublemakers.
Troublemakers.
Like I liked every one of them, to be honest. I think I especially liked the barterer guy.
The grocer.
Yeah, the grocer. So he's like in super, super, super max prison, but they cannot stop him from just getting anything that he wants.
So, and his like cell lined up all next to him almost looks like this tiny newsstand.
Right. Like, which it has, is like, incredible.
Amazing. And so I think with this whole, you know, getting into the underground of Shinjuku and like having basically our main characters play into that, there's one thing, there's a really good, there's a sort of bad, and something that fucking grinded my gears.
Uh-oh.
And it's and one villain in particular was the emblematic nail in that fucking coffin. And I hope they get rid of this, but
so you didn't like the magician.
Fuck that magician.
I loved him.
Fuck, we'll have a discussion here in a second. Let me tell you at least what's good. What's good? I think having a character, an MC specifically, that has the ability to see spirits, and therefore the way they cling, the way they can like haunt people. We've seen this tried before, right? We had a little bit of it in Bleach, like way early Bleach. We had Inspector, which just trash. But in this, I felt it was kind of, I love this concept of like a guy who can like see the stains of all the sins of what would otherwise be like a shady, hard to access undercover network within like something as big as like a mid to large size city. So I think the way that he kind of cuts through, and he wasn't like stepping in to save the day every fucking time. Like they kind of played to strengths, like Takumi, their hacker guy, who I kind of love, by the way, who would play his part sometimes. And Misaki as the bruiser would play hers. I don't know. I love the idea of being able to see supernaturally the sins of this quote unquote underworld and, you know, make judgment calls and moves based on that perception. It's really interesting. I like that.
So the main reason in the first place that he was even discriminated against is he has this thing called like
the evil eye.
The evil eye that allows him to essentially see all the stuff that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And that is what I found interesting. He had it, but also the Calamity Crusher had it as well. But he was on essentially the right side of history.
Right.
In his thing. So I don't know. I think they tried to play a lot of the, like, it's really the eye of the beholder as to whether you're evil or not.
I see what you did there.
Thank you very much. Or the eye of the evil beholder.
The Evil Eye of the Beholder?
Yeah.
Yes. We had it perfect, and then we went back to workshop it. I love it.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you just got to play, you know.
Double down.
You need to know when to hold them, when to fold them.
Double or nothing.
And when to go all fucking in. anyway, so I think they really did try to play with that as, like, the main concept of the first half of the show. And where they did, I think it was good. But then they sort of drop that, and then they get into this, like, mystery, who tried to kill Polka? And I felt they did not do enough of a job to get to the answer there, to where my interest waned in the middle for that, because yeah, all the goals started becoming, okay, we have not figured out who tried to kill Polka, but I guess we could just, like, get involved in this unnecessary troublemaker game for a while.
Yeah, and I think there you kind of broadly stroked the bad right there, right? Is that I felt like they had this, what would be a pretty compelling thing, right? You have a kid that should be dead, the child of one of the largest conglomerates in Japan, at least up there with, like, the top 10, and basically, there are people that are expecting to be dead, so there's probably take twos for them. You have in a family with, like, infinite resources and wealth, and then insinuations that they'll never find them.
It's like the Arasakas.
Thank you. Like, they have this really curious thing. It's
Wait, fuck up, Samurai.
Yeah, it's a whodunit, but the who, like, the who got it done to them is still around. Like, all right, motherfuckers, like, someone tried to kill me, and I legitimately did die.
Right.
And I don't know. Then they pivoted away
to, like, a less interesting storyline.
Yeah, and the thing with, like, the whole symbology of yeah, like, the emblem, and I kind of liked
so like, that's another whole storyline,
yeah,
that in my opinion deserved its own time. You know what I mean?
It deserved its own. That should have been the lead in to fucking season 2.
Right.
Yeah.
But instead, they, like, mushed it all together, and they're like, all right, we still have every possible question that we had in season 1. We still have it. Season 2, we'll have to get to the bottom of something probably eventually, maybe, sir, please.
Yeah.
But, like, I really just personally, I don't like having so many mysteries out and about that it's like, to me, it seems like you would have to divert your attention constantly as, like, the main group there to, like, slowly inch toward all of the different answers you're seeking.
Yeah, it didn't feel like the narrative naturally put something down to pick something back up.
Right.
It was juggling at that point.
Exactly.
And you felt like and if you ever tried to juggle, you have to look at each ball individually.
Everything's up in the air.
And everything's up in the fucking air, and then you drop everything. So they just, like, they broke my ankles trying to juke to, like, start new shit. But then they just left all the other stuff, which is fine for a show with mystery to have things left out hanging. But give me a natural progression. Don't just suddenly have some motherfucker come in on the side looking for a symbol that ties into our MC while they're actively trying to do something that is, like, pressing. And then they're like, it felt like ADD almost. Like, everywhere they looked, like, ooh, another mystery. Ooh, another clue to something
right,
completely fucking different. Like, okay, I don't know.
I think a lot of it, unfortunately, comes down to the corpse god's, like, strategy seems to not exist. Like, he basically, his initial goal was just to go, like, make money.
Which hey,
like, okay.
All right.
But, like, it just seemed very rudderless.
However, I think the fortune teller thing itself was a pretty good shtick, with Takumi hacking, doing the hot readings with it, with looking up information, and then you had some kind of cold reading stuff, and then you basically did have Polka's evil eye to then actually garnish information from spirits every so often. That's enough to be like, and then we got Hasarogi?
Yeah.
Which sounds like a pasta dish, is all I'm saying. The entire time I was looking at that, I'm like, I'm hungry now.
Pasta pierogi?
Yeah, Chef Hasarogi. I don't know. And it's, I can tell that there's some threads that I found were really kind of interesting. Like, again, I know we said his name a lot, Hasarogi, the way he tied in later, Okay.
Yeah, it was really good.
I kind of dug that. But yeah.
I just prefer personally in my storytelling to like deal with one thing at a time and ideally close the loop rather than just opening another thread that eventually will like, I think the way I'm thinking about it is like all of these have to like slowly transition and like end at the same time or else it's not going to make any sense later.
Right. And I think I hear you. And I think for me, I don't necessarily need my loops closed, but if you're going to start another one, make it feel natural that, okay, we are here now on this initial thing.
Or connected would
right.
be cool.
I now have this much more pressing thing that fell into my lap. And once we resolve that, oh wait, we got a next major thing in our big loop. Like I can go on different adventures and do other random shit. Just make the world feel cohesive.
Or like, what if they had found out, okay, nobody in Polka's family ordered the hit, but for whatever reason, somebody in this organization whose symbol we now have did.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, we'll still get to the actual goal at the end, but like now we've found another thread we have to pull to figure out the answer to the first thing.
Right.
Rather than what seems like two completely disconnected like threads. Right, like if they're intertwined, it's a different story. It's maybe we're just explaining storytelling mechanics here that piss us off.
Well,
but
I will say, I think they have given. While I'm upset by the way they handled it, I think it was very rough and tumble. I think there is enough of threads here that this does actually happen at a very base level. But before I get into what the last saving grace of the show, the part that pissed me off so much was that motherfucking magician.
Okay.
I think
so.
It's
just funny because he's very close to Gentle Criminal.
He's extremely close to Gentle Criminal, and
which you loved.
Okay. Yes, but here's the rub here, though. Right? Is that it? Gentle Criminal, at least he was goofy, but he wasn't like a driver. Right? He was an antagonistic force to Deku in a very kind of small way, and. Here's how I describe the guy in this one is called Phantom Solitaire, and Tenya Sarumiya, or whatever I think his real name is, but we'll call him Phantom Solitaire. He basically is a magician out here, you know, pulling David Copperfield type shit to like the nth degree. He's out here making buildings disappear, stealing prime ministers, stealing all the prime minister's opponents because fuck them too, fuck the government, right? Like he's a complete like. Off the wall, like does what he wants to and loves, but his driving force as a villain is he wants to prove, like he's doing all this magician shit to actually draw out the real magic and sorcerers and wizards that he thinks and believes exist on Earth 616, like in our actual world. That in and of itself is fine. That's cool. I actually take the character away and give any character that narrative, give the flaming bug guy that fucking narrative. And I think the flaming bug dude was a way kind of more like chilling, mysterious kind of antagonist for a first season. Solitaire, he was like both the driving force of the narrative that was supposed to be like underground, seedy, and also like darkly fantastical. But they put all this fucking like weird slapstick comedy shit at him too. I didn't like that at all.
So my rebuttal to that would be, Firebug is super reclusive.
Yes.
And so trying to pull, like, I think it doesn't fit his character to then be trying to pull, like, the real magicians or the real sorcerers into the light.
Okay.
Versus, like, magician guy, Phantom Solitaire's whole goal is to figure out, is this shit real? Are there real, like, psychos, you know, psychic espers?
Yeah, right.
And can I bring them to the light, or can I like find some way to get them all together, or things like that, right? And so him being the driving force for that, especially near the end where he basically like essentially falls into a symbol that supposedly is emblematic or causes strife within this like underground community, which he believes is the nexus point for all of these superhumans, like it does make sense to me. I think his like slapstick stuff is interesting because he is like, he's superhuman in his own right,
Yeah, weirdly so, right? Yeah.
And so kind of interesting there, where like he gets like sniped in the head and doesn't die because he like switched out his body double. Like, you know, just typical like, what was that fucking show? Now You See Me or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's a movie?
Yeah, movie.
Yeah,
sorry.
Now You See Me. Yeah. Now You See Me 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Where they're like just...
like magicians so good that they're like world-class thieves.
Right, they're just like fucking shit up.
Yeah.
Like calamities of themselves.
So let me... I'm not even going to rebut because I think that's fair. And I'm going to rephrase. I don't think that Phantom Solitaire should be removed from the show entirely. I just don't think he would have been a very interesting villain to have in a world that is brushing so close with the real fantastical. A character like him, I think, would be great, and he should still exist. His comedic antics could lend a lot to the show. I just think that the pure shit on screen that he does in pure actions wise, right? He breaks out of jail. He goes and seeks out this the symbol that he found from information that he got from the past. He goes and finds the one guy who would probably be able to sell him the information, says, fuck that, I'm going to go figure it out myself, put all that shit on blimps so it's televised everywhere, give him fat reward for like, hey, you know, if you know anything about the symbol and you can tell me legitimately what it is, I'll give you 300 million yen. All of those things is I think, a really good way to world build and kind of release the information about this emblem. I just don't think he was the guy to do it, because there are moments that felt tense and like when he was with the grocer, right? I felt that that should have been a lot more like tense, but the fucking antics just threw me for like a loop. Like, I don't know. And maybe that's what's happening with Misaki, is that like the reason that third thing I was saying.
Well, what antics did he play with the grocer?
Like there was time there where he was basically like, look, I want information on this. And the grocer's like, you're going to have to give me equal information. And he said, if you oil your hands up, you won't get paper cuts. And I'm like, dude, you're literally, there's a guy here that is like the biggest broker of all things in this entire side of the globe. And you're fucking around telling him how not to get paper cuts. I don't know. I felt it was just very disjointed when he was always on screen in moments that should have felt tense and kind of
okay, let me
engrossing.
Ask you a
yeah.
If you go to a store and you try to buy a Lamborghini and they say all you need to do is give us like information that is
worth a Lamborghini,
what information would you say? I wouldn't even know where to start. So
right.
I would probably start with some bullshit like he did, see where I'm at. You know what I mean? Like, and try to be like, so what kind of information do you want? You know what I mean? I think the grocer is playing an annoying kind of game with him, and I don't necessarily disagree with his tactic to be like, yeah, I can be an asshole too and say some dumb shit. You know what I mean? Because then,
yeah,
then they eventually are like, okay, we'll charge you $3 quadrillion.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't have $3 quadrillion. And they're like, well, we've done this interesting calculation where we've decided your life is worth $3 quadrillion because it's $6 trillion is how much you could possibly steal if you spent every living second making this. And I'm just like, okay.
Well, yeah.
Like, fuck you.
Counterpoint to that, though, this is not the transaction where it's two-sided favored. I have the information you want. And it's the seller's market at this point, because you're not going to be able to find it yourself, like, as far as you know, right? I'm the only guy that you know that could possibly even fathom a proper answer, historics, and context for what you just gave me. And I think that I like the grocer's mentality, like, look, this information to someone else could be, four yen. It could be a gumball, because that information in the hands of someone else is worth nothing more than a gumball. But in your hands, it could be worth literally your entire destiny. That was an interesting dynamic that, like, it's all about the worth of the person's
willingness.
I agree
with that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, if you're faced with the same situation, I'm not sure what information I possibly could have that would be worth, like, this worldwide conspiracy. I think it's actually more telling and more interesting to like offer some dumb shit. Like, okay, I'm down with you, of course. Like, the oil on your hands to not get paper cuts thing was fucking stupid.
Okay, yeah.
Like, maybe he should have been like, I'll tell you the secret to one of my tricks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That something like that would have been interesting.
That would have been, yeah.
But I think it's very interesting that he's like, okay, the other piece of this equation and why I'm charging you so much is I think that you'll enjoy finding this information in a different way more than if you were to just buy it from me. Whereas, like, he said something like to the effect of, if I just gave you the information here, you would feel like let down. But if you find out via your own methods, you're going to be like over the moon, and it's going to get you much farther down the path toward like what you're seeking. I think the grocer is an interesting character in that he seemed to be telling him something without telling him something, like, okay, this actually is important information that's like beyond the regular human level, right?
Yeah.
He basically did give him like free info without giving him free info, if you know what I mean.
I do. And I think that when you just described the grocer just now, he's an interesting character. I think that might be my really core issue with Phantom Solitaire. It's not that I don't like a villain that has some comedic antics. We've seen it twice. Super fun on screen in My Hero, right? And you know, even Gentle Criminal, he's a fucking goofball, but he had a little bit of heart at the end. Fucking love that guy. But we have in this story all of these villains. You have Lemmings. You have the flame eating bug, and you have the grocer, and you have all of this stuff that basically he felt like a fish out of water almost. And even if he were the one comedic villain, I can still forgive that. It just felt like they used his comedy at very jarring times. So I think the comedy's good. I think him as a character is great. I just don't think he was utilized in the right spots. And it felt kind of really off-putting to me the way that a scene would like build tension when we just had a bunch of comedic bullshit happen with Polka and Misaki and whatever. And, you know, Tamuki is basically this, you know, comedic relief for that group too. You have this big rising tension of like, you know, these forces are finally coming together. And then you have Phantom Solitaire in the background, just, you know, completely cutting through it all, which just like feels like the floor drops out for me. So I don't know. I don't think he's a bad character.
He's the only one willing to do the, like, I guess, bombastic thing to get more information. Like, Polka would not do that. He would kind of do his, like, underground shit with Takumi and try to get the answer. He would talk to Clarissa. He would stick within the clandestine community, essentially. Whereas, like, Magician Man is just completely outside of it entirely. I think the coolest part about him is that he literally went to prison on purpose and stayed there until he was like interested enough to find out like another troublemaker is like actually around.
Well, it was not even that. He saw the video of the skeletons and he's like, that could be fucking magic. That could actually be it.
But that's what I mean. Like he saw there could be another real magician around.
Right, right. Yeah. And again, I'm still standing by my stance that
he was weird. He was a weird character. I totally agree.
He was annoying, but it's not his fault. It's just how he was utilized as a character. I don't blame you, Phantom Solitaire, but here's hoping you're kind of utilized in a more, and maybe he started out serious too, which is a little bit like, I was like, oh, we have this like dark magician guy. That sounds kind of fucking sweet. And then he's like, oh, and I was like, all right, okay.
Well, he was in prison for years, you know?
True. And speaking of that, I mean, another big aspect of the show that I really liked were kind of the cop duo, Tsubaki and Arase. Yeah, and those two, Tsubaki was kind of this interesting foil. He reminded me of kind of this world's like, I don't know. No, definitely not Harvey Dent, because he's kind of like, you know, if they had like not so good cop and really, really fucking shitty cop. But like they work together in some way. Like one was conniving, the other one was an absolute fucking lunatic that was just hiding very like behind the thinnest of veils. Like I feel like if you gave him free rein, he would just snap. And he has in the past. He used to be like a gangster of some sort, right? Like a bruiser.
Right. So that was kind of an interesting thing too. But it's like when you create a special unit to go after like supervillains, you kind of need some cops with attitude.
Oh yeah.
And RSA actually seemed to have some aspect of supernatural kind of shit going on.
A little.
Considering he was able to go toe-to-toe with Lemmings, which that guy is, like, for sure beyond, like, Superman version.
I have a theory. Lemmings is
just a bunch of rodents.
Oh my God. So he actually used rodents. So
he's actually Lemmings.
Yeah, Lemmings is a villain who is working with the person we'll bring up last, because I think he's the guy who put the hit out.
I don't think so.
Not Lemmings, but the guy he works for.
I don't think he did.
All right. Well yeah. So he's covered in head to toe in bandages, and he's always in a hood, and you can't see any part of his like person really, but he is like beyond supernaturally fast. I'm like 105% sure that he is one of those fully synthetic robot things, the Shinoyama robot.
I'm not 100% sure, but it's totally on.
Because we saw...
It's totally like possible. Right. He's an android boy.
The actual little android boy, Shallow Yu or whatever. His name is, I think, Chinese-inspired. X-I-O-Y-A. He basically was like... He became quadriplegic because of like one of the tasks he took on when he was super young, and got a bunch of these super high end Shinoyama prosthetic parts, because that's one of the big things they do. He couldn't cut Lemmings at the end. He shocking him seemed to slow him down. So I'm like, that boy's a full prosthetic. He's just a fucking robot. You never got to see any part of him.
Well, so it's possible.
Okay.
The other thing could be he could have like a skin imperviousness like ability.
Yeah. Oh,
where,
okay.
Where like he doesn't take physical damage from like blunt or like cutting.
Like piercing. Yeah.
Piercing. Hmm. But he seemed to obviously have like an elemental damage aspect.
Hell yeah.
But
okay.
They didn't like fire would have been interesting to see.
That would have been
interesting.
Because
then his bandages might fall off.
That's right.
And then we could finally get to the bottom of this fucking thing.
That's a good mystery.
He had like weird like chameleons types abilities though. He could like go invisible, it seemed like.
Yeah.
He's uber fast. He's uber quiet. Like kind of a weird group of abilities. I don't know, man. I don't know that I have a theory quite yet on what his deal is.
And very end of the episode, going to string my conspiracy tinfoil hat shit going on. It would make sense because I think Takura, I think is his name, that Tekura, his basically, because of the way we said that the Shinoyama family works, Poka is like his uncle.
Yeah.
And it's his nephew, Takura, was...
I think it's Takeru.
Takeru? Yeah, Takeru. We'll get flack for it in the Discord. Fuck it. Come tell us we're wrong in the Discord. So his nephew, when it would found out earlier in the season that Poka was still running around Shinjuku, he's like freaked out. He's like, there's no fucking way. There's no way. Like he was like, I think he even had a throwaway line like so now it begins. Like how is he alive? He knew.
Yeah, I don't know. There's clearly something like extra weird about it too, because if he's a direct heir of Rosen, why did Rosen leave him entirely unprotected? Like, there's something weird going on family wise, outside of Takeru clearly like trying to take the reins of the family.
Right, right.
But there's also like should be other siblings that Poka has that should be in line before Takeru. So, like, I just don't see what's going on.
Remember,
I don't think they've done a good enough job explaining what the fuck's happening.
It was well known that Rozan dotes over Poka. Like literally is a clear favorite.
He decides to not give him any bodyguard and leave him on to his own devices.
Potentially, wasn't there an element of him, like, I know... Corpse God made the excuse of a journey of self-discovery, but I can't remember the very, very first scene, the context by which he was out. I don't even think we got why he was over there in the first place.
That's what I'm saying. Like, something is clearly other thing is going on.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I mean, even like the fucking girl they think's like got autism. They're like, put a bodyguard on her.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Like Shark Girl.
Right. Right. That character, I will say, like, her name was Sayo.
Yeah,
Sayo, and then the bio boy's name was Shio Lee, because he was from the Healy family.
Yeah,
Healy away from your feelies. And he can because he's got Heelys in his feet. So I found his character very fucking weird because he was like, I could be a better son to Rosan than Polka ever could. Fuck that little twerp. Even though the guy that saved his life, that dotes over, he dotes over Rosan, and he's like a hand, waits on him hand and foot. And when the guy that is, he owes his life to tells him, hey, that may not be my son, but like I vibe with him and he's protecting my real son. Can you just like watch over them and also like my other blood relative? And he's like, you got it, chief. I'm going to fucking kill them all. Like, that's such a weird, like.
Yeah, he definitely took a weird turn and a strange, like, I felt leap in logic that I was not on board with. Like, yeah. He like was very clearly super into following orders.
Right.
To a point when he decides, JK, I'm doing whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, and but it's still in the favor of protecting, quote-unquote, his lordship. I'm like, you're trying to kill, like, a couple of his blood relatives and the guy protecting his blood relative and his favorite son, whatever, fuck it. And you're thinking, like, that's what Master wants. That's what Master gets. Protection.
Yeah. I mean, it was...
Very odd.
It was obvious he thought, like, Rosan had been, like, duped, essentially, by... whatever entity was in Polka's body, but it's just like, I think that's just a youth thing more than anything. Like,
yeah.
Fuck you, dad. You don't know what right. the hell is going on.
But speaking of what's going on, that's my thought. Tekaru, whatever his nephew's name is, he put the hit out. He's head of security. He'd have access to the Shinoyama.
I just feel
like
they've pushed that so hard that it's like, it would be so much cooler if he's not the guy.
Every single scene that we see involving this signal, the symbol later in the season, that chat room that keeps popping up, it's Tekaru that's the guy that's like chatting with everybody the entire time.
Right,
he's the
like,
one.
He has control of Lemmings. Why wouldn't you just have Lemmings go kill him? Nobody would ever know.
Go kill Polka?
Yeah.
I don't, and I think that's part of it too, because everyone knows in that family that Lemming, no, they don't. They don't, because they said all of his inner circle of assassins he hasn't told a lot of his family about.
It just seems like it doesn't make any sense. He's got like superhuman assassins on his payroll. If it was actually him, why would he go outside and like essentially add all these breadcrumbs all over the place for like other people to find out through Clarissa? She's actually been in a bit of an annoying character. Like this idea of like, oh, I never... essentially kiss and tell with my clientele, like who ordered the hit. Cause she basically, the very first episode, he kills, Polka kills, or Corpse God kills, Misaki, resurrects her, gets the contract turned off
for him. Yeah.
Because he's like, I'll let Misaki quote unquote live.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
So basically she goes back to whoever ordered the hit and told him to fuck off.
Yeah, we're on hold, baby. We're on
right.
hold. Yeah.
And then from there decides she won't tell anyone what's going on with that. And rather than like actually just like progressing the story down the line, like she has the answer.
It's so funny because her character as a trope, she's like an intermediary. She's like, you remember Lacoya's Recoil, where they had like the people that those two chicks answer to in that bar and they get like their assignments. That's her, Clarissa. That her job is to be this information intermediate between the people that, you know, ask for the hits and then she sends Misaki out and all that shit. But like, what does she actually do to help much outside of here's a space you can rent? Like we give you a room to live in, but she doesn't actually seem to do much else out like to help like the efforts of Takumi and Misaki after that point onward, right?
Well, she seems to be like a middleman putting together teams to go do missions, right? So like she would apply Zaki to a mission of assassination. She applied Takumi to a mission of assassination, whatever it would be, right? So she gives him this team and calls off the hit, but then just decides like, I'm gonna stand on principle here and not tell you who ordered the hit on your body.
Well, you know what's super funny too? Isn't the whole point of an intermediary to protect the talent / assets from the clientele so then they we'll get someone to go do that. Once the job is done, we'll let you know, and then you pay us half now, half later kind of thing, right? She does that middle ground stuff. the client should never know the assassin. Yet we have the scene where Misaka, I'm getting fucking worked up, that the guy just comes right up to her on the street and said, can you like come kill these like guys for us, please? I'm desperate. And then that's when like Polka sees the kids at his feet and says, yeah, I'll agree. And then she said, oh, if he's in, I'm in. And then they get ambushed by that fucking gang. I'm like, where's Clarissa? She would never let that shit happen if she was good at her job.
Yeah, so that was really early on. I don't really recall what was going on, but he was in the same org as a guy she had just killed. I don't know how they figured out Zaki was the bad girl.
Yeah, right.
But there was like a tangential relationship there where like she had killed the guy who killed her parents.
Is that Jinba? Is that what they called him?
I can't remember that character.
But yeah, the guy that killed her parents that set her down this path
was part of the Yakuza group that these dudes were from.
Right, right. That is right. Yeah.
But still, Clarissa seemed really intent on protecting Zaki, and like it seemed to me Clarissa's main like altruistic job is to like take in all the misfits and kind of give them something to do, like Takumi, Misaki, yada yada. Probably the girl she groomed.
Basically, yeah. You seen the inside of that bar? Just grooming as far as the eye can see.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So like that's what I kind of think was going on there. And she cared so much about Misaki that like when Polka said I can resurrect her and keep her like essentially mobile.
I can keep her an asset for you,
right,
by the way.
She calls off the hit, but what I don't get is like it seems like a dangerous position to put somebody that you care about in is like this hit was called off by us, but there's other agencies theoretically that could take this hit and like kill both of our assets.
Right. 100%. So, I mean,
something weird is going on there. I don't get that.
Yeah.
But I also don't see why Takaru, his nephew, would need to go to Clarissa. It just seems like an extra layer of like putting himself out too much, like too much, a paper trail.
That's fair. He could have just sent lemmings and just snap that shit. Done.
Or Indian warrior princess that he's got. Or
who's looks badass as fuck.
Or other girl guy.
or other guy number three.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really kind of the story of this show, right? Is that it's like the initial hook is cool. That first episode is a really nifty hook. And from then, they can't quite decide. They have a lot of, like, you know, prongs in the fire, essentially, but, like, they don't really know where to stick them.
I totally agree. I think they underutilized every aspect of the show. Clarissa's group was underutilized.
Yes.
Comp 3 was underutilized.
Right. And when it started to get going, they merged with, like, Metropolitan HQ, and then it just lost a bit of its fun. And they added new random people, like Donjo and Yuta, and you're just like, okay, we're just getting fun with the... Okay, whatever.
But,
it's
like,
fine.
Utah seems like a fucking sicko.
Seems like a sicko. So, like, now I want to see more of that, but you did it too late, so I don't get enough of him.
And then they underutilized Polka's little group. They underutilized fire-eating, breathing bugs group.
Yeah, why are there two of them? Why the fuck are there two of them? It's so cool.
I mean, there's a lot that was, like, culminated for unbelievable reasons near the very end. And then also, Polka decides, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to actually start popping the fuck off and using my powers. I'm going to get to the bottom of this stupid fucking weird symbol thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Who the hell is from my world? Who is tainting the memories of my beautiful kingdom that I used to be a part of?
And how the fuck do I make some motherfucking money?
And how do I make friends?
How do we make friends? What? Oh, no, I know how. You put their souls in sharks.
Right.
That's the message of this show. If you want to make friends, learn necromancy and put your friends' souls in sharks. Done.
I'm also confused why he hasn't just put Polka in a body so that they could actually use him as a font of knowledge.
Yeah. Funny how he's finding skeletons left and right to do like can-can dances with Misaki, but like you couldn't find a single body.
Right.
Like to put Polka in, or better yet, put Polka back in his own fucking body and go get a strongman, right? He said, oh, I can't do much of this little body. I'm like, then go get another one.
Yeah. Like, literally, I mean, like, people die all the time, bud.
Right. Oh, that weightlifter just collapsed at a national championship. Yoink. Yoink. I'm going to take that body. Yoink.
Because of all the trend he was on.
Yeah. Dude, Anabol. Great. HGH. That guy's so juiced up, it won't matter to the corpse god.
His heart exploded.
But I don't need that.
You don't have a heart. You can do whatever you want.
They're underutilized across the board.
So, like, I do still like the show.
I think it has all the opportunity in the world to really hone it in.
There's still potential.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not writing this off at all.
No.
But it was not well executed from, I would say, episode 7 to 12.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree.
Up to 7, I was like, okay. Edge of my seat every week, wanted to see the next one.
Yeah. And I like I said, it just ran away from them. But if they can steer that ship right back on the tracks they had going, I'll be back in October. I'll be ready for season 2. With that being said, season 1 will get a 75 out of me.
I was thinking more like 68.
Wow. Wow.
That's not terrible at all.
I
just felt like, wow, a strong start. I didn't feel like there was enough actual progress toward any like real goal. Like, at least think like Demon Slayer season 1, they made progress toward becoming a Demon Slayer.
Right, yeah.
Whereas like, I feel like the beginning of the show, our main character was the strongest he's ever gonna be.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give it 72. 75 was high. I'll agree, but I still think it does belong in the 70s because it has a lot of promise. It did some things that have tropes as old as time. They, you know, twisted necromancy on its head, a little bit of the ghost detective thing that we've seen fail a bunch of times, this actually have a decent standing here. And I would say most of the villains, if not not properly utilized, for the grand majority were great and very interesting characters to try to explore a little bit, even if we only got little snippets, which is great. And they also seem like they always kind of had a mesh of like communications going on, like the grocer knew a lot of shit, and then, like, you know, the flame-eating bugs would get in contact with, like, Phantom Solitaire, and they would both go to a place at the same time to look for answers. It seemed like they had this loose mesh of, like, resourcing each other a little bit. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the most confusing character so far was the fire-breathing bug.
Yeah.
Because he seems to be fucking everywhere.
He or she. And what his philosophy seems like, he thinks that we're in a fucking simulation. He starts, this world is a buggy program.
I'm not gonna lie to you, he's got a point.
Kind of fucking point, dude. That's right. That's why you have to, every night before bed, guys, you multiply a couple primes together and get a massive number, or do some crazy equation to see if you break the simulation. That's how you do it.
You try to hit a singularity every night,
basically. Yeah, yeah. That's how else am I going to tear all this shit down, dude?
I think you start counting and then you realize that, like, androids don't dream of electric sheep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So if you're able to conjure a sheep in your brain, like, you're not.
Oh, they can't.
Automaton.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, fuck. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I can't think of electric sheep, dude.
Well,
I don't know what that means for me.
You think of normal sheep, not electric ones.
I can't think of either. I've never seen a sheep before. I just keep thinking of goats. But yeah. Okay. You know what? I still think people should, if you're kind of a fan of like criminal shows with a little bit of, if you're a fan of like Be the Beginning kind of thing, like, It touches that realm a little bit. Be the Beginning was fantastic.
And I'll say this, what this does is it gives you a little bit of a, like, a change up in the isekai world.
It does.
Because isekais have gotten pretty stale. They all sort of do similar things.
And even the ones that don't do similar things are doing stupid things like vending machines and bullshit.
Right. So I just think it's like a safe option to still try to enjoy the isekai trope.
Yes.
Genre.
So
to speak.
Fucking A, dude. That was an A plus. That was an A plus accent compared to last week.
I don't even know what it was.
That just now?
Yeah.
It's Frenchish.
I think I like moved to Swedish at the very end.
But it was seamless. I loved it. It was great.
So to speak.
You know what? If you're looking for something from last season and you already hit the big highlights, you'll have a fun time with this one. Yeah, and you'll be geared up for what's hopefully a better season too. But I think that is it. Thank you everyone for coming to class. If you'd like to talk about maybe why Dead Mount Death Play was like your actual dark horse, or kind of agree with me that Phantom Solitaire was kind of used like shit, you can hit us up in the Discord, giving us a little bit of love on patreon.com/Sleepology. $1 up gets you into that Discord with all of the past guests and the lovely Patreon folk in there. $3 and up gets you the syllabus sidebar, our lo-fi, high vibe, sometimes anime, sometimes not. Sometimes on hiatus, not often though. I don't think it'd be not that often.
Yeah, I'd say like our hiatuses are just really long.
Yeah, not a lot of hiatuses. But when we do a hiatus, we don't half-ass them. Okay, we 100% are hiatuses.
Yeah, we like to really do like half a year to a year of a hiatus.
Yeah, but it keeps them on their toes. They never know if they'll get one tomorrow or like tomorrow, like 2024.
Like tomorrow.
Yeah. Like multiply like by 100.
Right.
Yeah, that gives us enough time, right? Yeah, if you want to do any contacting of us, all of those links are in the description below on the platform. Guys, I've turned over a new leaf. I'm not mad at you anymore. Guys, it's okay. I know you're on a platform, and that's okay that you didn't know either. Just two clicks over and down, over 200, and I want to say 12 episodes of just all anime content to your heart's desire. And if you would like to check out a little bit of merch or a content tree that's easier to use, weebology.com. Simple.
Beautiful.
So odd that we snagged that beautiful URL. Like, no one had thought of it before.
Yeah, I believe you're able to contact us from that page as well, correct?
You are. Yes. If you want to hit up, and you don't even want to deal with, like, Gmail, ew, who deals with fucking snail mail on the webs, man? I wouldn't. I don't. But if you want to contact us right at that email, because we just contradicted ourselves, at the very bottom of website.
I use it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. At the very bottom. There is a contact us form. You can give us a little love or give us an anime that you want us to watch, and we'll probably do it. We've been hitting some of the viewer ones lately, so you know what? I think that's it. I'm gonna go cry. I'm gonna go become a corpse god. Becomes a corpse god.
I think you already were a corpse god.
Yeah, I was. Yes, until I can return to corpse god and maybe resurrect myself in another world. I'm Ricky,
and I'm Return to Monkey.
Oh, and this has been Weebology. Deuces. Reject humanity, return to a monkey.
Yeah, monkey.